20 days without fresh water. The equatorial Pacific sun cooking everything that isn't already soaked in brine, lips cracked open and bleeding. 3 inflatable life rafts tied together with rope, each one barely big enough for 2 men to lie down, 8 survivors. No radio, no flares, no shade. Just an empty horizon running in every direction, and the question of whether anyone on Earth even knows you're out there. Most men would stop praying and start saying goodbye. Not this one. I'm Taildragger. This is the Hangar on Radio Hangar. Pull up a chair, because today we're talking about a man whose life reads like someone invented it for a movie and was told it was too much. 3 separate incidents, any one of which would have been enough to finish an ordinary person. And through all of them, the same stubborn, methodical, absolutely relentless soul. His name was Edward Vernon Rickenbacker. And if you have any love for aviation history, you already know it. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. Born in Columbus, Ohio in 1890, Rickenbacker was the son of Swiss-German immigrants. His father died when he was 12. He left school to help support his mother and 5 siblings. Swept floors, worked in a glass factory, did whatever was in front of him. What eventually saved him was machines, specifically the automobile. He had a feel for mechanical things, for the way engines breathed and what they were telling you when they sounded wrong. He became a racing driver, a good one. He ran at the Indianapolis 500 in 1914, 15, and 16, competing against the fastest men in the country. Speed made sense to him in a way that not everything in life did. Then America entered the First World War in 1917. Rickenbacker went to France. Not as a pilot, not yet. He went as a driver, chauffeuring staff cars for General Pershing's headquarters. But every time an airplane crossed overhead, his eyes followed it. He talked his way into flight training at 27 years old. That was old. Most of the young men coming through were barely 20, 21. The instructors looked at him and figured they were doing a courtesy. They were wrong. The 94th Aero Pursuit Squadron was the famous Hat in the Ring Squadron, named for the American expression of throwing your hat in the ring, of committing everything to a fight. It was the first American fighter unit to go into combat on the Western Front, and Rickenbacker became its defining figure. He flew the SPAD 13, a French-built aircraft with a 220-horsepower Hispano-Suiza engine. Sitting in that open cockpit, you smelled castor oil from the engine, lubricant and fabric dope from the wing covering, and you felt the particular cold that lives above 10,000 feet on an overcast autumn morning over the Argonne Forest. You flew with your scarf pulled up and your goggles down, and you scanned the sky for dots that weren't birds. Rickenbacker's method was patience and positioning. He climbed for altitude before committing. He studied his opponents. He was willing to break off an attack if the geometry was wrong and come back when it wasn't. In an environment where young pilots were dying by the dozens because aggression was outrunning their skill, that discipline kept him alive. He scored his first aerial victory on April 29, 1918. Over the following 7 months, he shot down 26 enemy aircraft, 22 airplanes and 4 observation balloons, against Fokker D-7s and Halberstadts, against some of the finest pilots Germany could put in the air. He became America's ace of aces on September 25, 1918. He flew alone into a formation of 7 German aircraft and attacked them, came out of altitude, picked his angle, and went in. He shot 2 down before the formation could respond effectively and then broke away clean. It was for that action, among others, that he received the Medal of Honor. The award was made in 1930, 12 years after the fact, because the original paperwork had gotten lost. That delay tells you something about how the military treated its heroes once the shooting stopped. He came home famous. He started the Rickenbacker Motor Company, made quality automobiles, and then watched the market collapse at exactly the wrong moment. He lost most of what he'd made. He wasn't the first aviator to discover that reputation doesn't come with a balance sheet attached. What saved him again was the industry itself. He acquired Eastern Airlines in 1938 and ran it for 2 decades. Eastern under Rickenbacker was a demanding operation. He expected everything from his people because he knew exactly what they were doing. His pilots called him the captain, and sometimes things less complimentary depending on the day. But they flew for a man who had bet his own life on a machine more times than most of them could imagine. That counted for something. Then, February of 1941, Rickenbacker was a passenger on one of his own airline's Douglas DC-3 aircraft, a routine overnight flight into Atlanta Municipal Airport, low visibility. The approach went wrong. The airplane struck trees on a ridge short of the runway. The wreckage was extensive. When rescue workers reached Rickenbacker, they were not certain there was a point in hurrying. broken pelvis, shattered hip, fractured knee. One eye partially displaced from its socket. Internal injuries that surgeons would spend hours cataloging in the operating room. A priest came and administered last rites. He was unconscious for weeks, then he came back. Slowly, painfully, the way you come back when you have decided you simply are not finished yet. 8 months later, he was moving again. October of 1942. Secretary of War Henry Stimson sent Rickenbacker on a classified inspection tour of American military installations in the Pacific Theater. The situation at Guadalcanal was desperate. Forces in the Southwest Pacific needed a credible, experienced assessment. Rickenbacker was 52 years old, still walking with a limp from Atlanta, but nobody else had quite that combination of credibility and knowledge. They put him and a small party aboard a Boeing B-17. Call sign Old Eight Ball. Their route went from Hickam Field in Hawaii southwest toward Canton Island, a small coral atoll serving as a refueling stop in the middle of the Pacific. They never found it. The official investigation later pointed to a navigation error. The details were debated for years afterward. What is clear is that they flew past Canton Island without seeing it. Then they flew past where Canton Island should have been. Then the fuel gauges began their slow and certain march toward zero. Captain William Cherry brought Old Eight Ball down on the Pacific Ocean. Ditching a B-17 is not like a forced landing on a grass strip. You hit the water and the airplane either breaks up or it doesn't. And if it doesn't, you have seconds to get out before it sinks. They got the emergency life rafts deployed. Three small orange rafts, 5 feet long, each 8 survivors. They tied the rafts together and floated. October 21, 1942. The sun was already passed overhead. They had 4 oranges, not 4 cases, not 4 bags, 4 individual oranges for 8 men with no knowledge of when or whether rescue would come. Rickenbacker divided them precisely, equal shares, no exceptions. He established discipline from the first hour because he understood that discipline was the difference between 8 men pulling together and 8 men pulling apart. They had fishing line, no bait. They tore fabric from their clothing and used their bootlaces as leaders. For days, they caught nothing. On day 8, a seagull landed on Rickenbacker's hat. He was wearing a fedora, a civilian among the military men, this 52-year-old with the sun-cracked lips and the rib injuries from the ditching. He was sitting completely still in a canvas life raft in the open Pacific, and a seagull landed on his head. He did not move quickly. He raised his hands the way you reach for something on a high shelf when you do not want to knock it over, unhurried, no sudden motion. And he caught that bird with his bare hands. They killed it, divided the meat among 8 men, used the entrails as fishing bait, and that bait caught fish, small ones but fish. I keep coming back to that seagull, because what it required, that particular quality of patience, of holding absolutely still in the moment that mattered, was the same quality that kept him alive over the Western Front in 1918. He had a gift for not moving until the time was exactly right, and then committing everything he had, whether that was behind the trigger of a SPAD 13 or sitting in a life raft with a gull on his fedora. The principle was identical. Sergeant Alex Kaczmarczyk died on day 8. He had recently undergone surgery and was already weakened when they went into the water. The ocean takes the weakened ones first. 2 more men would die before it was over. Colonel Hans Adamson, who had come along as Rickenbacker's military aide, came very close to joining them. They caught rain twice, scraped it off the canvas raft walls, squeezed it from their clothing. Rickenbacker organized morning and evening prayers. He kept the men talking when they could still talk. He argued with them when silence started feeling like surrender. He refused to let anyone quit. Day 24. November 13, 1942. A Navy search aircraft out of the Ellis Islands had extended its patrol pattern past its calculated limit, on instinct or grace or some combination of the two, and they spotted the rafts. Rickenbacker had lost more than 30 pounds. He was 52 years old and he looked older than that. He could barely stand up. He was back at his desk at Eastern within weeks. When reporters surrounded him wanting the full account, he gave them enough and not a word more. He talked about what still needed to be done to win the war. He was not a man who wore What that life amounts to, I think, is a lesson about a certain kind of capability. It is not aerobatic skill. It is not natural aptitude for the stick and rudder. It is the quality of remaining exactly as calm in crisis as you are when everything is fine, of observing before acting, of waiting for the right moment, and then not hesitating when it comes. That transfers from the cockpit to a life raft to a boardroom. Rickenbacker carried the same instrument to every situation he ever found himself in. Research for today came primarily from Rickenbacker's own account in his memoir, Seven Came Through, and W. David Lewis's biography, Eddie Rickenbacker, An American Hero in the 20th Century. More at RadioHangar.com. I'm Tail Dragger. That's the hangar. Blue skies out there. Go find some.